We do this every Friday on Scoops with Danny Mac, and it's brought to you by Blue Tail Medical Group. Doctors Bays, Crane, and Wolf are there to help you, a great alternative before surgery. So if you're in line to have surgery, think twice about it and check out what the doctors at Blue Tail Medical Group can offer you. BlueTailMedicalGroup.com. Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, good morning. How are you doing?
Happy Friday, Dan. I'm doing well, and good to be with you. Hope you're ready for a good weekend.
I am. Game one last night, the Cardinals and the Reds, and now we've got three more. I'm not sure who's going to come out of this division. You know, generally speaking, you look at Memorial Day as kind of being a measuring stick, barometer, a measurement for where you're at, maybe some improvements, where you're weak, all those kind of things. I just don't see, Cardinals included, unless there's major deals made, that a team runs away with the Central Division. It seems to be highly competitive, and this will be the way that it is all year long.
I think it's going to be a three-team scuffle all the way through the finish line. And, you know, so much was said about the Cubs, and they were going to sell off. They were going to tear the team apart. Theo left, and they let so many guys get away this offseason. And I think the ownership in the front office there would be eager if given the opportunity to kind of tear that team down and spin things forward, Dan. But you can't do that when you're leading the division or within striking distance, and that's where the Cubs are. So it's a credit to me to the players in the clubhouse and them getting things put together. They're playing better than I think the guys who built the team thought they could. And really it makes you wonder what might they look like if they would have kept some of those pieces they let get away. Do they end up adding at the trade deadline as opposed to what they plan to do, probably initially selling off? The Brewers, they're right there. They started playing better. They made a move, got a shortstop, and all of a sudden they're showing some signs of life. Christian Yelich is back, obviously the most important player. And the Cardinals are right there too. Now, the Cardinals have got some issues here, Dan. They can't throw strikes consistently enough. I think they've got to really do something about their starting pitching with Jack Flaherty out. I know they're smartly going to be cautious with him, and they should be, but they, you know, go back to where they started the season, leaving spring training and all of the hope that they had for the rotation. And most things have been negative, not positive, especially after Jack was derailed by that oblique. But you're right, three flawed teams, but three teams that are within striking distance of grabbing this division. And I don't know about you, but I'm kind of ready to say that the Reds are probably out of this. Maybe that's premature.
Wow.
But I don't think the Reds are going to have the pitching to get there. I think this is a three-team race again.
Yeah, very well could be. And to your point about the Cubs, it is interesting with all the guys, and they've got a ton of guys that are in the final years of their deal. And it's not just, you know, some bench guy and, you know, you're plugging them in for a year. These are great players that were part of 2016. These are organizational faces, that kind of thing. So I think it'd just be very tough, generally speaking, whether the Cubs or another team to say, hey, you know, we understand we're in first place, but adios. That's a very tough sell for your fan base because, as we know, once you're in, it's a crapshoot. You might get lucky. You might get hot. You know, you never know what could happen. So I do think it's a fascinating storyline in the next couple of months.
And if they start adding, you know, if they talk themselves into being buyers, then the fans are right to say, well, what if you just would have kept a guy like Yu Darvish?
Yes.
What if you just would have given these guys one more shot at it together? I'm talking to a Cubs fan the other day, and that was his point, is like, yeah, they could add at the deadline if the team forces them to, but are they going to add something better than what they let walk away? Fair question when you let a guy like Darvish go. Now, some of the moves they've made that were kind of poo-pooed in the moment don't look so bad. They let Kyle Schwarber walk. They add Jock Peterson. He's starting to play better. So, you know, they have talent on that team, Dan. You look at their lineup, and it's deep, deeper than any team in the division if guys are healthy and swinging it. So the question for them was going to be the pitching. They're coming up with enough. Their bullpen has been really good. Kimbrel's really nasty.
Yes, he
looks
he is.
Fixed. And the Cardinals are crossing their fingers and praying to the baseball gods that they can get some sort of rebound like that for Andrew Miller, right? I mean, that's what they need. They need him to get right and be kind of a throwback version of himself in some way, shape, or form, not as a closer, but just as a guy who can contribute, because they're really missing that kind of presence in their bullpen. So a reminder to not write off the old relievers too soon, because they might have a couple more tricks left up their sleeve. But You're right. I don't know how the Cubs could get away with tearing this team apart at this point, unless they just go in the tank. I don't think they're going to. I don't think the division is going to be good enough all around to force them on some massive losing streak. They're going to have to find a way to do something to help this team, as should the Cardinals. The Cardinals should be thinking about the trade deadline now. And I'll keep harping on it, Dan. The Nationals are not good. They keep losing games. Max Scherzer is a free agent after the season. I know it's like wishful thinking, but I'm going to keep wishing it. And as long as the Nationals are last in their division and the Cardinals need starting pitching, come on, it's right there.
It is right there. I'm finding that, and I've never felt this way about a Tyler O'Neill at bat, but I'm, you know how you have certain guys and you stop and you watch. I'm not saying it's like watching Big Mac or Nolan Arenado or some of the great players in the game that you will stop and you're going to watch. But I'm paying awfully close attention to what he's going to do, because you know what he is right now? And I understand he doesn't walk a lot. He's going to strike out a lot. I'm okay with that, with the production that he's providing. He is entertainment right now. You know, this game is about entertainment, and we've lost sight of that, and we need to have it in the game. He makes me stop and want to watch. Might be an infield hit. Might be a hard ground ball to short. He's going to beat it out. Or he might hit it 500 feet. He's just got the great combination of speed, power, and you're not sure what he may do. Again, I'm not comparing him to the other guys, but man, he's entertaining to watch.
I'm to the point where I don't have any questions left about Tyler. I think we know who he is, and I think you got to attribute the Cardinals and compliment them for showing patience with him. You know, they said for a while now, this guy can be special. This guy has some skills that if we give him time and opportunity, they will show. And it's there. The power, I think he's averaging a home run every like 10 and a half at bats.
That's right.
Which is absurd. He doesn't walk, but that's not the profile of who he is. So get guys on base in front of him and let him hit one over the fence to bring him in. He helps you defensively. He's stealing bases. When he's on the field, he's going to do something to help you. Now, that's the question. When he's on the field, my concerns for Tyler O'Neill used to be the slumps that he would go in. It used to be him whiffing on breaking pitches. Okay, I think he's really matured in that phase. He's still going to strike out a lot. He's not going to walk much. But if he's on the field and he's hitting a home run every 10 and a half at bats, you keep him on the field and you have him as that dangerous ambush hitter at 5 or 6 in your lineup. He's the kind of hitter there that the best teams have. The Dodgers have guys who can ambush you and flip a game at 5, 6, 7 in their lineup. That's what Tyler can be. The question for him is going to be, can he stay on the field? The way he plays, you know, and I love it. It's that hockey style mentality. He'll run through a wall or try, as he did the other night against the Dodgers. Can he stay in the lineup? Can he stay healthy? We've seen some issues with, you know, groin pulls and we've seen fluky things like a hurt finger sliding into a base. We know he's tough for the nails. It's not an issue of that. It's just, is his body going to keep betraying him? There are a lot of guys who have great skill sets who cannot stay on the field long enough to capitalize on them. If this guy plays 145 games in a season, Dan, he's going to be threatening to lead the league in homers. I really think that. And he's probably going to be an all-star. So can he figure out a way to use that energy, that enthusiasm, that speed in a way that doesn't hurt him? You don't need Tyler O'Neill sliding headfirst in the base and breaking his finger is what I'm saying. You know, go feet first. And if you're out, you're out. But pick your spots and try to find a way to keep him on the field, because if he can do that, I don't think we're going to have many more questions about him. And the Cardinals outfield situation is going to look a lot more secure.
Should remind everybody this Sunday, 10:30 on Fox 2, extensive interview with John Mozeliak, president of baseball operations. That's at 10:30. As we're talking baseball here with Ben Fredrickson and also Jason Mott, catching up with Jason Mott from the 2011 World Championship Club. And interesting story, what he's doing now outside of baseball, but still in the game in terms of coaching. And, of course, he's got the K-Cancer shirts, which has been an amazing, amazing story that you still see all the guys wearing the K-Cancer shirts around Major League Baseball, and that'll be this Sunday at Fox 2. I'm such a lucky guy because I get the chance to visit with Ben Fredrickson every Friday. So if I want to yell at him about something he wrote, I can do that. I see you smiling there, Ben. Or I can just say, you know what? He's got a pretty good take there. I like what he's having to say. So I'm going to jump around here. You ready to go?
Hit me.
So Don Garber in town with MLS. Haven't had a lot coming from that camp. There is a lot of concrete going up, though, in downtown St. Louis. It is so exciting to hear about not only the stadium, but then his thoughts on what's happening. So yesterday, Ben, I had the privilege to MC. It was a very intimate breakfast of business leaders and some of the staff with City, and Don Garber was there. It was just a Q&A, and they said, hey, go for it. Ask him what you want. You know, you have a good grasp on our situation and St. Louis, so go for it. I'm telling you what, he is one impressive guy. I came away just really impressed. I already was impressed, but I came away more impressed. Had a private conversation with him that lasted a long time with Andy Taylor right there, and it was wonderful to hear some of the inner workings of what they're doing. And my point on this is that he kept on coming back to St. Louis and how appreciative the league has been and how the league has taken notice, like, holy smokes. Look at all these people that want tickets. Look at all these people that want suites. Look at all these people that are supporting this team. And they don't kick until 2023. And so when he was saying that, I was up on the two chairs, and I said, well, what the hell took you so long? That's what, and he started laughing, and he said, you know, it is a great point, though, because this is a soccer town. So I know a lot of people come to us. You have been at the forefront of it at the paper, and obviously here on the website we talk a lot about it when it's there's a lot of news to be had. But having him in town, stadium tour, excitement, and that's kind of the update. I mean, they're moving along, man, and it's a lot of exciting things happening with the MLS franchise.
Garber's enthusiasm for this project and this team has been pretty palpable since he first showed up for the final, you know, the official announcement. And he talked about, you know, going back more than a decade, kind of having St. Louis on his list of cities that he felt like the league needed to be in. And
yes.
There were multiple attempts and they ran into different problems, but he went through the timeline of, yeah, we thought we could do it here and it didn't work. And then here and here. And it was pretty clear that he's been hovering over St. Louis, waiting to plant that flag. And then finally came into a group that he felt confident in doing and was willing to kind of share the league's vision for what teams need to be located in downtown, appealing to that younger audience as soccer becomes a more popular sport here in America. And these are things that they kind of share that vision on. And he's been here a bunch. For various things, to check out the stadium, to meet with potential sponsors. He's really been an advocate for the team. So I think it shows his enthusiasm. I think you can look around the league and see different headlines that have popped up, whether it's funding problems or division in the owners groups of different teams. And you kind of, then you compare that to what's going on in St. Louis. And it's like I can understand how St. Louis has become a little darling to Don Garber, and his interest is really in making sure this succeeds. So,
but tell you what, though,
man, every time I drive by the stadium, there's a new thing popping up. There's real progress going on the youth front. I think that's something that maybe people don't know much about.
That's right.
They say, well, what are they doing? Why isn't there a coach? When is the roster coming? And you almost have to view it as kind of like a plant. Like, they're planting the seeds now, building this youth academy that they hope, by the time that they start, they're going to maybe have players there or close to being there that they're going to have from their academy that have jumped up. So the point that I've talked to Lutz about this is, like, you don't go out and sign a coach or a player now because you don't know what they're going to be playing like in 23 or coaching like, and you might have better options. So what they're doing now is kind of trying to lay that groundwork for what becomes the team.
Yeah, and I think you hit it on the head how St. Louis has kind of become the darling of MLS. And I'm here to tell you, and some people say, well, you guys sound like homers. Well, they're dealing on Don Garber's side with the Taylor family. So you cannot find any more solid ownership than Carolyn Kendall Betts, the family, the Taylor family, the Kavanaugh, Tom Strunk group. I mean, it's all come together, and these are civic-minded people with deep pockets. Don't get me wrong. That's part of it. But people that care about the city, and they're going to make sure that this thing goes out right. It's not going to be done halfway. It's going to be done right in all facets. Now, does that mean that there won't be some bumps in the road? Of course there will. You know, it's their baby. They get to mold it any way they want, which is awesome. And it's ours in St. Louis, starting from the ground floor. So the interest level has just been amazing. I think they've been blown away by that. But the transition to try to make this thing go, I think, has been, those tensions have been eased because of the ownership group that you have. Solid footing, good people, smart people that care. And if you're a commissioner, man, that's all you want.
I saw that thought process when they decided to push things back a little bit to delay the year because of the pandemic. And I think the initial impulse would have been to rush to get it, to get something going. And
yeah.
Hey, you know, there were some times where the decision might've been, well, let them just play their opening season in the dome. But they didn't want to do that. They wanted to start in their own home. They wanted it to be an authentic launching point. They didn't want to start their team off in a building that was known for the NFL team that left. And that's not good imaging. And it would have kind of put a cloud over things. So I do think they're making decisions for the long term. And I sense the impatience of fans, and I get it. They want to know, like, okay, who are we cheering for? What is this going to look like? But I think we're going to see more. And one thing I think the team is going to do, and it'll be helpful, is trying to introduce potential fans, those of us who are going to be following this team, into what this team's identity is. You know, Lutz has a very unique idea of how the team wants to play. He wants it to be up-tempo. He wants it to be offensive-minded. He wants them to create offense off their defense. And I think it's going to be a brand of play that is going to be very energetic and very easy to follow, even for people who are like, I mean, I'll be honest, like me, who did not grow up analyzing soccer. I just didn't. So I think there's going to be a good balance of compelling play, but also a willingness to bring folks in who maybe are not soccer junkies, and they need to do that. I think they're going to do a good job of that. We'll be seeing more of that moving forward. And, you know, I think too, you can look at the sponsor. I mean, they've got the Purina throws down for the uniform sponsorships. I think at some point soon, we'll probably have more information about the stadium sponsorships, but these are not small players in St. Louis that are getting behind this thing. It's going to be a first-class thing. And I think that years and years from now, my hope, being a sour NFL person, is that we look a lot smarter for having swapped, I know it wasn't a trade, but for having swapped MLS in for the NFL when they left.
Yeah, and I think about the corridor that's going up there and the bars, the restaurants, basically you had all that space that wasn't being used, and now you're going to have that done because of MLS. I mentioned that I love to jump around here with Ben Fredrickson. This was kind of interesting to me this past week, and we look back and look ahead, but Naomi Osaka, tennis player, decides, you know what, I don't really want to speak to the media. Don't want to do it. And if you go to a French Open, you go to Wimbledon, you go to these play US Open, I mean, it's part of the obligation of the athlete to speak to the media. And if not, you'll be fined. As a guy that covers sports for a living, where do you stand on that?
Well, I don't know why anybody wouldn't want to talk to us ink-stained wretches. I think it's probably the highlight of most of these athletes' jobs, fielding questions. I'm kidding.
I'm torn on this,
and I speak to this from a place of, like, I know the last thing, like, fans want to hear about is writers complaining about, like, access, but I do think that if you're going to play as a professional, there are certain things that are expected of you. And whether or not there could be a better way to go about that, I'm all ears. I think sometimes a bunch of reporters sitting in rows at a press conference, pitching questions through a moderator is not the best way to do it. I think we would all prefer a more casual, more personal way, at least most of us would. But sometimes that doesn't allow itself. So I guess I would have liked to see maybe more of a discussion about, could there be a better process, as opposed to, you know, she's fined because she doesn't want to do it. The discussion here, and it's worthy of one, is about mental health.
Absolutely.
And the anxiety that she deals with, and that shouldn't be dismissed. I do think there has to be a way for questions to be asked and answered that would maybe be in a more comfortable setting. But let's be honest, Dan, players now have millions of followers on Instagram, Twitter, social media. They have things like the Players Tribune, where they can get their message out in their own words with a kind of a player-friendly focus. And there's never been more ways for athletes to answer questions, to share what they want out there. But I do think that there still needs to be a realm for questions that are conducted from independent journalists to say, hey, and sometimes they're not big things. Why did you decide to bunt in that situation? Like, the world is not hinging on that question, but fans care about why decisions were made. And if you simply give a manager in baseball a microphone and say after the game, hey, talk about the game, whatever you want to say, they're not going to explain the things that we ask about for the most part. Some will, a lot of them won't. It'll all be, this guy was great, everything was great. Our job is to say, well, can you explain what happened there? And I think there has to be that for fans. Fans do care about the TikTok of why things happen. Ideally, the best interviews come from more interaction, from one-on-one interviews. And the good news is we're getting back to some of that in sports. But there is a fair question to be said. Can we do this in a better way? Can we do this in a better way that's better for the athletes, that gets better questions and answers? And I'll be the first to say, sometimes in those settings, the questions stink. And sometimes they are insulting for not the purpose of getting information, but for showing off. And things like that do a disservice to those of us in the media. So I don't have a hot take response. I'll say this. If you're a professional, you need to conduct yourself like a professional. And you, that part of that job is answering some questions in a format that should probably be improved at times. I think that's kind of where I stand on it.
Yeah. I think it's also important to note that if you're a very good player and a lot of people are following you and there is a responsibility, again, taking out the mental health aspect, and you hit it on the head, that's most important. The individual's health, physically, mentally, is most important. That aside, there is responsibility, though, to quote-unquote kind of sell the game. You know, the game is giving you a lot here. You're in a platform of playing in a great tournament or a big game in which maybe millions of people are watching or they're following on their phones or tablets. Maybe they're paying for the tickets to watch the game. And fans want access. They want to hear from those that they follow. So I think there is a responsibility to promote the game. How do you promote it? Well, the media is the conduit between the fan and the individual, the team, the sport. So I do think there is something to that, the responsibility of kind of carrying the torch of the greater good, which is the sport. And to your point, there's going to be some dumb questions, maybe some unusual questions, bad questions, things that have nothing to do with the sport that are nobody's business. I get that too. But I mean, just generally talking about the sport that you're a part of is truly part of the job, whether you like it or not.
Well, another good way to do it would be the leagues themselves being better enforcers of who is in that room and who is on that Zoom call and who is asking the question. And this isn't not me being like, they should ban certain outlets. No, I'm talking about, look at the credentials and the track record of some of the folks who are there. You know, the Super Bowl loves to talk about how many people at credentials to cover the Super Bowl media days. And then everybody likes to make fun of the quote unquote, the media, when there's guys who show up with a voice recorder and wearing a tuba and a sombrero.
Right.
And it's like, well, then the media is a big joke. Well, no, that person who got credentialed is a big joke. There are other people there who are trying to do their job. So these leagues can't have it both ways. If they want better quality of journalism being done in those mass settings, which no one likes, but sometimes it's the best you can get, then they should do better about who has access to ask those questions during those settings. I think that's something that is fair to discuss too.
Let's wrap it up with a little Blues talk. As we know, the Blues are out of postseason contention. However, it'd be nice to have a normal off season. And that leads me to what happens to Vladimir Tarasenko. Are you buying in that he could come back and be the type of player, a difference maker on the ice that he was in years past? Or is he a guy that, you know, maybe you expose in the expansion draft and say goodbye to potentially? What do you think?
Well, I think the hope that Vladdy gets back to being the guy he was when he was an all-star and one of the best scorers in the league are probably too optimistic. I do think he can be better than we saw this season as he was working his way back from that shoulder surgery. He probably, and my colleague Tom Timmerman had a good point, he probably has the most what-if factor of any player who could be returning. And I can understand if the Blues say, look, we can't risk exposing that because we think he could do a lot more. And if he does more, then he's going to be do better than maybe anybody we could add. But I wouldn't be hammering on the table or objecting if they do leave him unprotected. And the risk there is that you lose him, but the benefit to losing him in that setting would be you also lose his salary. And that's money you can direct elsewhere, whether it's going after, you know, one of your unrestricted free agents or else. I think what the Blues have to decide, Dan, is what you just said. What can he be? And they also have to decide if what he can be at his best is going to fit into the system. Craig Berube's not going anywhere that we know of. He has a system that works. One thing that has not really found good footing in that system is a player who scores, but if he's not scoring, doesn't do the other things. And unfortunately, that's kind of where Tarasenko has been lately. If he's scoring, he's playing well, but if he's not, he's kind of floating in all other facets. And I don't know that that works in this system. So it would be a message, certainly, if he's unprotected. I assume that Seattle would jump all over that if he was, but they might have some of the same questions. I think the unknowns about his health moving forward are pretty big. So I would imagine he's back. I'm pretty sure the Blues will probably protect him. But I'd have to say that I'm on the end that would say, well, I don't think it would be the craziest thing in the world if they took a risk, because, A, they would be able to do a lot more with that salary space in a very tight cap situation. So I don't have nothing personal against Tarasenko. I just think the Blues have to be honest with themselves about if his best is behind him.
Absolutely. What are you working on coming up? I always like to ask you that because you're kind of you lie in the weeds, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden there's this big bombshell that pops out that you've been working on for weeks. So you're a guy that lies in the weeds, maybe a snake in the weeds. I don't know if I don't know if that's fair, but
I don't know. No, I've been slacking, man. I've been using some vacation time. I'm back now. I'm looking forward to this. I got a chance. It's up at STLTA.com for folks who are interested to catch up with Isaac Bruce, who is in town.
Love the
back
Reverend.
In STL for his one more of his free football camps that he does with boys and girls. He's done them for years. He is awesome talking about the wait that he's had to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. He's very excited about this combo ceremony that's going to be happening in August. He was great about his gold jacket. He told me, Dan, that when he got his Super Bowl ring, he wore it every day straight for like more than a month. And he wasn't joking. He said, I washed dishes in it. He goes, I did everything in it just to get the thrill out of it. And his hint was, I think he's kind of doing the same thing with his gold jacket. Like they might have to triple dry clean that thing by the time they get it back for the ceremony. He told me he was cutting grass in it. I think he was joking, but I'm not sure. But Isaac is pumped and he's doing a cool thing for folks who are interested. He's actually raffling off a chance to go basically to the induction ceremony with him. Check out his website, the Isaac Bruce Foundation website, and you can check that out. It's going to benefit his foundation. He does a lot of cool stuff. Scholarships. He creates the free camps in St. Louis every year. He also has a cool thing where he helps kids who have gotten into schools across the country actually make that trip to their college. He helps fund travel to campuses, which is a big thing for kids. If you get in and get a scholarship, that's great, but how do you get there? He helps kids out with that. So he's done a ton of great stuff and he's going to be pumped to be a Hall of Famer. And he was great talking about it.
That's phenomenal. Good stuff. Like I said, you're lying in the weeds, man, but you got to get creative. You know, in COVID times, you probably have maxed out all the different stories that you could write about in sports. I'm being a little over the edge here with this, but you think about all the different stories that you could write in sports when there's no sports going on. I mean, you got to find out every angle. And that's where we were last year. You know, I've done a lot of thinking about this, Ben. We just passed Memorial Day. And to me, Memorial Day is, you know, as we've talked about, that's kind of the barometer. Well, that's 60 games. Last year, regular season was 60 games. We'd be done with a regular season. So this time last year, we were hearing players, the union going back and forth with owners and how they're going to get this done. Can it be done safely? Definitely no fans. Who's going to get the money? I mean, it was just all that stuff was going on. So it is... I don't take it for granted anymore. I really don't. I don't care if I'm calling a game at a studio or down at Busch Stadium, which I love, to have the opportunity to have sports back. I just don't take it for granted. I really don't.
You don't even take it for granted when the Cardinals are trailing by two touchdowns in the first inning. So
nope.
I heard your enthusiasm the other night.
I'm telling you. You know, you go down 14 or whatever it was, 11-1 after one inning, and you say, hey, there's still plenty of stuff to talk about. Guys are on the field. Fans are in the stands. Life's good, man.
No, it is good. And I'll tell you what, one thing that I can't wait for is to go into a college football game this fall and to see those tailgates rolling and smell it and hear it. That to me is when it's going to be like, okay. And then of course, baseball when it's full, Busch Stadium full, it's already filling up. It's going to be special.
You bring up a great point. I think the crowds, and I mean this on the road games, I'm not there, but I can sense it in my headset, but certainly at the home games, the intensity of these crowds is greater than I can ever remember. And I think it's part of, in, you know, it's due to the fact that people are out and they're unleashed and they're happy and they're excited. And I think the other part is they miss going to Busch Stadium and the excitement of a game and seeing their buddy that's a season ticket holder and they haven't seen him for a year and a half or whatever the case may be. And so the people, it's just like an unleashing of emotion that people are pumped to be back. So imagine that with a college football setting with kids and those people that come back that support it. It's going to be bonkers. It'll be great.
Mizzou has a chance to have a special season. They got to beat Kentucky in week two, Dan. If they do that, they could be starting off 4-0, 5-0. I once predicted they were going to start 8-0 and got laughed out of the room. And so I'm not predicting it. I'm just saying the schedule lays out for them pretty good to have a pretty special, energetic season. So if Eli Drinkwitz wants to follow up a positive first year, beat Kentucky in week two and get this team ranked and rolling, headed into a massive game against Texas A&M. And there could be an energy around Columbia for football like we haven't seen in a long time.
Absolutely. Hey, buddy, thanks for doing this. Have a great weekend. Be safe, and we'll catch you up next week.
Sounds good, brother. Have a good weekend.
You too. That's Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And again, we're brought to you by Blue Tail Medical Group. Visit them at bluetailmedicalgroup.com. And again, a friendly reminder, baseball talk on Sunday night on Fox 2, Scoops with Danny Mac, the television show. And my guests will be John Mozeliak and Jason Mott. So we'll see you 10:30 on Fox 2.